Good morning and welcome again to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the South Fork. I'm just going to say it, and I'm going to stop being giddy about it maybe next month, but I am the Reverend Kimberly Quinn Johnson. Maybe I'll stop being giddy about it next year. But so our theme this month has been blessing. What does it mean for us to be a people of blessing? And how do we not only recognize and honor our life's many blessings, but on this weekend, when we celebrate Memorial Day, as we turn our minds and our hearts to recognizing those who have died in service, how do we, in the midst of sorrow and brokenness and regret, turn our blessings around into the world? Our opening words, our call to worship this morning, is from Patrick Murfin. We need no flag snapping in a quickening wind, no soaring melody raised full-throated by a choir, no marching ranks of sacrificial sons, no hollow oratory by any dignitary, no anthem or fireworks, just this: imperfect strangers came unto a perfect land and made their way as best they could, built, destroyed, oppressed, forged the chains of slavery, and then struck them, passed the torch of liberty, imperfectly lit and often flickering in the gale, into ever widening circles. We light our chalice at the beginning of our worship to symbolize in part the warmth of this community and to recognize that UU congregations all over the country and the world are doing something similar on Sunday mornings. I invite you now into a time of meditation and reflection. to take a deep breath and to let your body relax. Close your eyes if that is the thing that's comfortable for you. These words are from Mark Bellatini. When to speak and when to keep silent. When the machetes of injustice tear apart the fabric of the nation and the world, I speak up. When the sunset resembles purple and orange vines, entwined like lovers, I sigh in silence. When the mud of deception and trickery smear the mirror of public life, I speak up. When the moon rests like a thin slice of lemon in the sparkling glass of morning, I smile in silence. When the insecure bully me or the greedy clutch at the common purse, I speak up. When a song lifts my soul aloft like a lark, I swoon in silence. When wars and rumors of wars destroy the hopes and lives of children, I speak up. When I am overcome by the sheer reality of a communion of life connecting every woman, man, and child on this one whole earth, I give thanks in silence. When I am restrained by a system of control, manipulation, denial, and duplicity, I speak up. When words cease, the breath moves deep and slow, and the inner and the outer are as one for a time. I wonder in deep silence. Let us hold this moment in silence. Please rise as you are able and willing and join in singing hymn number 1007 in your teal hymnal. There's a river flowing in my soul. Thank you.
Several months ago, I was reading a book called Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates. And it was a book that my book club was reviewing and reading. And I was very moved by this book. Some of you I know have read it since and have found it also moving. And it was the reading of this book, along with a couple of other things, that brought me to Kimberly to say, how about an adult reflection on this book here at the UU? And I said, I would like to invite other congregations, other groups of people to join with us. And so we asked Leah Oppenheimer from Temple Adas Israel if they thought they would like to be involved, and they were. We asked the Baptist church down the road if they were interested, and they were not. We asked Canio's bookstore, and Canio's was. And so that's how that reflection of that book came to be, a cooperation between us and Canio's and the Temple Adas Israel. We also asked the Episcopal Church, and they wanted to be involved, and I think a couple of their members came to the first meeting at Canio's, but I haven't seen them since. Anyway, one of the reasons that I wanted to do this was because it was so moving, and another reason that the book brought out in me was the fact that a kind of a Christian attitude, which is the sins of our Father rest upon us. And, you know, we're responsible for the sins of our fathers in some way or another. And also in the Jewish tradition, there is a saying that if not everyone is free, then none of us are free. And that's basically how I feel about the state of our union, that we're still suffering because many are suffering. And also my work as a volunteer at Sylvester Manor on Shelter Island reminds me of that all the time, that we are not free yet. There's people to this day suffering, and maybe suffering more silently than they were in slavery and more hidden than in slavery, but it's still happening, and it's happening in a big way. And so those were the reasons I asked Reverend Kimberly if we could study that book together.
I want you to imagine two young men. This is a true story. The first is 28 years old. He is an immigrant, born in St. Thomas of the U.S. Virgin Islands. and moved to New York when he was a child. He lives in Brooklyn, New York, and later in Florida with his mother, his stepfather, younger sister, and two younger brothers. As a young man, he moves back to Brooklyn and lives with his girlfriend and their daughter. The second is 27 years old. He is an immigrant, born in Hong Kong. He immigrated to the United States as a child and lived in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, with his parents and his grandmother. He also has a younger brother in college. This young man has aspired to become a police officer since he was a child. Two young men, the same age, both brought to this country as babies, both members of families who loved them, families who had dreams for them, families who must have imagined that they would find their destinies here in this country, the American dream. These two young men would never actually meet, but their paths would cross in a tragic way. Imagine again now that you are a young police officer, a rookie cop, still within the first 2 years of your service. And you are assigned to what is commonly understood to be one of the most dangerous, possibly the most dangerous housing project in New York City, Louis Pink Houses in Brooklyn. This sprawling brick structure with frequently broken elevators and dimly lit stairwells. You and your partner are patrolling the building. It's a cold November night. The lights, of course, are broken in the stairwell. The elevator is broken. It is pitch dark, and you are afraid. You enter the darkened stairwell with your flashlight in one hand and your 9mm semi-automatic pistol in the other hand. You hear a noise, and you shoot. That officer was Peter Liang, the 27-year-old immigrant from Hong Kong. When he fired his weapon, he struck a resident of that housing project in the chest. That resident was Akai Gurley, the 28-year-old immigrant from St. Thomas. Two young men whose paths would cross in this tragic way. But what happens after and what happens before compound this tragedy and make it more than that. After the shot, in his panic and probably in his confusion and fear, Peter Liang debated with his partner about who would call their supervisor to report the shooting. While Akai Gurley's friend ran for help, banging on a neighbor's door and calling 911. Peter Liang and his partner walked past the body and continued down the stairs, while Akai Gurley's friend performed CPR. Shortly after, three other officers would arrive, one taking over the CPR and another radioing to hurry the ambulance. Within the hour, Akai Gurley was pronounced dead at the local hospital. Peter Liang was indicted by a grand jury on charges of second-degree manslaughter, criminally negligent homicide, second-degree assault, reckless endangerment, and official misconduct. He was found guilty of manslaughter and official misconduct. And after his guilty conviction for manslaughter was downgraded by a judge, Peter Liang was sentenced to 5 years of probation and 800 hours of community service. Akai Gurley was an innocent man minding his own business, walking in the hallway of his own building, his own home, and he is dead, killed at the hands of one of the officers who was placed there to protect him. I think of this story as I have a lot in this past month, and I am at a loss. I don't know what there is to say about this. In part, I am struck by the particular tragedy of this case, of this life. Akai Gurley left behind a 2-year-old daughter, a girlfriend, and her 5-year-old daughter, who was Gurley's stepdaughter. I am struck too, though, because this is not a new story, nor is it a singular one. Peter Liang was sentenced in April of this year. As I listened to the pain of Akai Gurley's family as they again told his story, as they continued to tell of their grief and their loss and their desire for justice, and as I listened to advocates and supporters of Peter Liang struggle with his role in this. He is not a racist cop, they say. He is a scapegoat for the system. As I listen to both sides of this argument, I think about how complex this issue is. It's not black and white. This spring, we've been engaging in an ongoing discussion sparked by Ta-Nehisi Coates' memoir, Between the World and Me. In his memoir, Coates tells the story of one of his friends, Prince Carmen Jones. Prince Carmen Jones could not have been much older than Akai Gurley and Peter Liang when he had his fateful encounter with a police officer in the year 2000. For a young black man to be stopped on the road by a police officer would not have been extraordinary. It was, in fact, routine. And sadly, for a young black man to be killed by the Prince George's County Police Department, while not routine, would not have been uncommon. So much so that it wasn't until the third day of news coverage, when they ran a picture of the young man, that Coates realized that this was his friend from his college days. Coates provides this narrative. Weeks wore on. Nauseating details slowly dribbled out. The officer was a known liar. A year earlier, he had arrested a man on false evidence. Prosecutors had been forced to drop every case in which the officer was involved. The officer was demoted, restored, and then put back on the streets to continue his work. Now, through additional reports, a narrative has begun to take shape. The officer had been dressed like an undercover drug dealer. He'd been sent out to track a man whose build was 5'4" and 250 pounds. We know from the coroner's report that Prince's body was 6'3" and 211 pounds. We know that the other man was apprehended later. The charges against him were dropped, but none of that matters. We know that his superiors sent this officer out to follow Prince from Maryland through Washington, D.C., and into Virginia, where the officer shot Prince several times. We know that the officer confronted Prince with his gun drawn and no badge. We know that the officer claims he shot Prince because he tried to run him over with his Jeep. We know that the authorities charged with investigating the shooting did very little to investigate the officer and did everything in their power to investigate Prince Jones. This investigation produced no information that would explain why Prince Jones would suddenly shift his ambitions from college to cop killing. The officer given maximum power bore minimum responsibility. He was charged with nothing. He was punished by no one. He was returned to his work. The officer that Coates describes was black. Coates continues, "There were times when I imagined myself, like Prince, tracked through many jurisdictions by a man in a criminal's costume, and I was horrified because I knew that I knew what I would have done if such a man confronting me, gun drawn, mere feet from my family's home." Is Peter Liang a victim? Sure. Peter Liang is a victim of a system that puts its most inexperienced officers in the most dangerous settings. Peter Liang is a victim of a system that put him there with not enough training, so that his primary emotions that night were fear and panic. Not even enough training to hear him tell it, to be able to perform CPR as the man that he shot lay dying in a pool of his own blood. Peter Liang may even be a victim of a policing system upheld by policies like stop and frisk that told him that black people and black neighborhoods are dangerous and to be feared. Peter Liang is a victim of systemic racism and othering, rooted in fear in much the same way that many, many non-black people are in America. But fear of black people is not an excuse to kill us. This is part of the dream, the American dream, that Coates returns to again and again in his work, a kind of funhouse version of the American dream. This ideal that Americans, if you work hard, you have equal opportunity and you can achieve success and prosperity through hard work. That is probably what Peter Liang's family thought coming to this country. And that is probably what Akai Gurley's family thought coming to this country. But what some of us know about that dream is that if you scratch deeper, there is a rottenness that has always been there and has always relied on an us and a them. As one of the ways that we divide, one of the ways that we maintain that us and that them is through fear and dehumanization. Peter Liang is a victim, and so is Akai Gurley. It is possible for two things to be true at the same time. To hear that Peter Liang was in a bad situation, and to say also that he should be accountable. To hear the pain and loss and grief of Akai Gurley's family and friends and community, and to hear their cry for justice. This issue, complex and painful as it is about more than Akai Gurley and Peter Liang. It is about more than what happened on that night in November. It is about what we have done as a society to create that situation. And it's about what we do afterwards. We say that we are a people of justice. But if you are Akai Gurley, or if you are Prince Jones, how can that be? If you are a young black man in this country to see over and over and over again that your life and your death doesn't merit the same justice. How can that be? Peter Liang killed Akai Gurley, and he is sentenced to probation and community service. Just as 15 years earlier, the PG County officer who killed Prince Jones was charged with nothing, punished by no one, and sent back out to do his work. How can that be? We pair justice with mercy because we believe that we are not defined by the worst thing that we have ever done. Mercy because we are not the sum of our mistakes. Mercy because it is a gift of our creation and a gift to each other to acknowledge our failings and to begin again anew. But justice and mercy must be paired. Thomas Aquinas said that mercy does not destroy justice, but it is a certain kind of fulfillment of justice. Justice without mercy is cruelty. But mercy without justice is the mother of disillusionment. What happened that night is a tragedy. But justice demands that we hold people accountable. Justice demands that we hold systems accountable. Justice demands that we do better. This month, we recognize May 4th as Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, honored beautifully with Ruth's work here. This weekend, we recognize Memorial Day to remember people who have died serving this country in our armed forces. These days of remembrance are, for us, an act of mercy. They remind us. We say, never again. We remember and we say, no more. We tell ourselves that we are not defined by the worst of who we have been, or the worst of who we are. We remind ourselves that we are freed by creation to begin again anew. But please, let us pair mercy with justice. Let us say that we will not be silent, that this is a time to speak up. Can we say that Black Lives Matter and have it mean more than a banner or a button or a hashtag? Can we say it and mean that Black lives are worthy of the same kind of justice as everyone else? Can we say it and mean that Black boys and girls are worthy of the same kind of education as everyone else? Can we say it and mean that Black people can live in a neighborhood where they can walk outside of their door, in their hallways, down the stairs, without fear? Can we say it and have it be more than just a slogan? Because when we say Black Lives Matter, there are Black people, people behind those words whom we love and whose lives matter to us. This is more than justice and mercy. That is love. On this Memorial Day weekend, as we remember with never again and not in our name, may we pair mercy with justice. May we discern when to stay silent and when to speak up. And may we speak. Please join in our closing hymn, number 121. Standing, if you're able or willing, we'll build a land. Chalice with the words in your order of service. We extinguish
the flame, not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
Our closing words today, if you care to join hands, let's join hands. This is the one for joining hands. These are not mine. These are from Wayne Arnson. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth, that you are not alone.